This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's a good way to ease into a cloudy, chilly Sunday morning. Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm your host, Brad Porter. The talented Jed Marshall is producing today. Lined up a great show. Who is this, by the way? Is this Barry White?
No, this is Logic.
Okay. I heard, and I should know that because I saw a tweet the other day about Logic having upheaval in his personal life, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of research him a lot. He's awesome. He's coming to Lollapalooza. I really want to go.
He's very original.
Yeah.
He
had a great performance at the Grammys. He did one of his jams. I can't remember what it is, but it's about suicide prevention.
Right. So, yeah. Because people were like, what do all the numbers mean in that song? And it was a very poignant song.
Yeah, it's
song.
The suicide prevention
and
hotline.
Kids remember it because, I mean, I don't want to start the show on a downer, but the numbers across the United States are crushing to read the numbers. But Logic, I saw they did a piece on him on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago, and he's got this huge house and a nice swimming pool. And considering what his life was like before he became famous and had money, I'm happy for him. Things are changing for him right now, but that's okay. I like this. This is good. Good way to ease into the Sunday morning. And we are going to talk about sports. Jed Marshall has a great lineup of guests set up for us today. Coming up at 9:25, David Leske from Baseball Prospectus is going to join us. Talk Royals baseball. Opening day is Thursday. Thursday! Right? I have to double check that again. Opening day for the Royals. Home opener. Thursday. I cannot believe it. I think they're going to stop in Omaha first for an exhibition game. And I know the players don't like it. They have to make that extra stop, and they're in Omaha playing in a minor league park. I like it though. I think it's a great thing for the organization to reach out to their minor league affiliates and say, hey, you know, some of your guys are going to be with us this year. Let's come and put on a show for you. And of course, the big news with the Royals yesterday is Danny Duffy had to be visited on the mound by the team trainer and the manager twice yesterday, and was pulled after two pitches in the third inning, and said he had some shoulder tightness, and it was like throwing in a swimming pool. And it could be just, you know, the fatigue of spring training. You know, he was making his last start, didn't want to push it. And that's good. That's a smart play. If something is not right and you're starting the home opener on Thursday, you don't take the risk. You come out. So, good decision. And the Royals have one of, if not the best, training and medical staffs in Major League Baseball. So, we'll talk to David Leske about that and what that means, because it's supposed to be Danny Duffy and James Shields head-to-head on Thursday. And Duffy looks up to James Shields as a hero, because one of the things that Shields told him over his time in Kansas City was he would tell him the number 200. You got to get to 200 innings. Danny Duffy hasn't done that yet. But Danny Duffy admires James Shields, as all young pitchers should. So we'll talk with David Leske from Baseball Prospectus at 9:25. At 10:25, Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com will join us. Covers the Kansas Jayhawks, or the K-State Wildcats, pardon me. And obviously he will have the downside of yesterday's Elite Eight matchup between Loyola and K-State. Loyola winning 78-62, and I'm going to get into that in just a second. So Tim Fitzgerald at 10:25. At 11, Andy Edwards from NBC Sports will join us. Sporting KC getting a 2-2 draw on the road at Colorado. And while 2-2 sounds boring, each team gets a point, it's a tie. It was quite a thrilling finish if you watched it last night. Nate Bucati on the call on Fox Sports Midwest, and Sporting was down. And it was also on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, because it was the night game, so it was not on 1510. But Nate Bucati's call at the end, Sporting KC was down 2-0 after, 7 or 8 minutes? And it was like, oh my gosh, you're on the back foot. But the most dangerous lead in soccer is 2-0. I've been told that numerous times by soccer aficionados. I consider myself soccer aficionado. Love it. Love Sporting KC. Love the sport. Did a nationally syndicated show covering Sporting KC and Major League Soccer for 4 or 5 years on the channel formerly known as Metro Sports. And so Sporting got back, pulled one back early in the second half. Felipe Gutierrez continues to just be bonkers. The offseason signing. He's a World Cup veteran. He's, what, 26, 27 years old. So he got it back to 2-1. And then in the dying minute of the game, I believe it was the 90th minute, expertly set up play between Felipe Gutierrez and at the finish, and then Diego Rubio finished off the final goal. And it was Kyrie Shelton who could have taken it, but he backheeled to Diego Rubio. And yesterday on our show, we had Nick Garcia on, and he said it was time for Diego Rubio to step up. So Diego Rubio scores in the 90th minute, and they smash and grab and take a point on the road. So Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com will join us at 11 to talk about that. And then at 11:30, Danny Klinkscale, who's had outstanding coverage all week long on Sports Radio 810 WHB, covering the Kansas Jayhawks and their run to the Elite Eight for the third consecutive season. So they'll play the Dukies today at 4 o'clock for a spot in the Final Four. And just to kind of set up what we're doing today here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, which has the best coverage of the NCAA tournament, because all the games are here. Union Broadcasting has all the games. So Danny Klinkscale at 11:30, and then at noon, the Westwood 1 NCAA tournament coverage starts, all the pregame coverage. At 1:20 p.m., Texas Tech and Villanova play for a spot in the Final Four, the 3 versus the 1, so another Big 12 team has a chance to get in Texas Tech. And then pregame coverage for KU begins at 2:30 with the KU IMG Sports Network, and then the game at 4 o'clock. So if you're listening to that Texas Tech-Villanova game when it starts at 1:20, and then when Sports Radio 810 WHB switches to the KU network, you can pick up that Texas Tech-Villanova game over on our sister station, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM. So you're going to have all the games here, Union Broadcasting, either on WHB or ESPN Kansas City, and it's going to be great stuff. So we got everything set up for it. We got a nice little Sunday lined up. Might go to the Home Depot, get some wallpaper, pick up some flooring, Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know if we'll have enough time for all of it. So let's start with, now that we've set up the day for you, let's start with Loyola Chicago and K-State. And Jed Marshall, chime in anytime you feel like it. Watching this game last night, I loved it for a number of reasons. One, it was a chance for another Big 12 team to get into the Final Four in K-State. But for me personally, it was about the kids, and four kids in particular. For K-State, Mason Schoen, Blue Valley Northwest. Also, Ahmad Wainwright, who spent a couple of years at Hogan Prep before he transferred to another school for his final year. So those two kids for K-State. I was invested in watching those kids in particular because I covered them in high school when I worked for the channel formerly known as Metro Sports. Did tons of stories on all those kids over the years. Over on the Loyola Chicago side, it was Ben Richardson and Clayton Custer, also both of Blue Valley Northwest. And their high school basketball coach, Ed Fritz, was at the game, as he was for the previous round. So I'm invested in those kids. Love Ed Fritz. His wife, Ann Fritz, who's the girls' coach at Blue Valley North, she was tweeting about it all night long. We were tweeting back and forth. Going to go to the Final Four? Yeah, he said, I'm going. Got to find a way. So I kind of tweeted out, you've been saving those nickels and dimes on a teacher's salary, get to the Final Four in San Antonio? He's going to get hooked up somehow. He'll get the tickets. I have every confidence in that. So that's where most of my interest was. In watching Ben Richardson, who was the defensive player of the year in the Mo Valley, go off for a career-high 23 points in that game was fantastic. He almost couldn't miss. This is as perfect a night as you can get in a game that's going to get your team to the Final Four for Ben Richardson. 7 of 10 from the floor. 6 of 7 from downtown. That's unconscious. When you're 6 of 7 from downtown, you're unconscious. Made all 3 of his free throws, pulled down 6 rebounds with 4 assists and 1 turnover. Remarkable performance by Ben Richardson of Blue Valley Northwest to help lead Loyola to the Final Four for the first time since 1963. And they had a couple of the former players from that 1963 team in the stands that they were showing throughout the game, along with Sister Jean, of course. But seeing those guys that kind of blazed the trail for players to come behind them was awesome. And I've got to admit, look, I don't cry after sporting events. I mean, even after the 2015 World Series, I was emotional because I got to watch it with my kids. It was the one Royals playoff game I got to watch with my kids because I was covering the Chiefs that day and I had the night off. So I was worked up, but watching Ben Richardson and Clayton Custer being interviewed after the game and talk about the hard work and going back to third grade when Ed Fritz put that team together with those two kids, and they're both saying, hey, no one called us Division I players. No one thought we'd be Division I basketball players. And we're going to the Final Four. So I didn't cry after the game, but let's say it got a little misty with BP. Got a little misty watching those kids from Kansas City making it to the Final Four. And I was half wondering whether or not the people that make the T-shirts and the hats that they give out after the games when teams advance to the next round, I was wondering if they would have them for Loyola Chicago. But they did. Because even if they didn't win, they could write it off and they box it up and send it overseas. It's what they do. But watching those kids that I've watched since they were little kids, and we used to do a thing at the channel formerly known as Metro Sports called Youth Sports. I can't remember the name of the show, but they'd have highlights of, you know, 5th and 6th graders. And somebody over there posted video of Clayton Custer from back in, I don't know if it was 5th or 6th grade. So you've been watching those kids since they were little. And then you watch them in high school win all the state championships and win all the games. I think Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson in 4 years lost 6 games in high school. 6 games. And now to see him go to the Final Four, man alive, I was on the edge of my seat watching that game. And I wasn't pulling for one team or the other because the K-State team, as I mentioned, with Mason Schoen and Ahmad Wainwright, also Kansas City kids, I'd be just as happy for them going to the Final Four and getting the Big 12 team in there. It'd be great. So I was on the edge of my seat. And even when the lead got to 20 points, I was still on the edge of my seat because I was like, is this happening? Are we watching an 11 seed Loyola Chicago team that won the previous 3 games by a combined 4 points that had to get a miracle in the Missouri Valley tournament just to get into the big dance? Is this really happening? Am I watching history unfold here? Yes. We were all watching history unfold. And on the good side was Loyola. They played, I mean, their basketball, when you watch their offensive sets and you watch the kick arounds that they have, and the guy that eventually ends up with the ball is wide open. I mean, how many times were they wide open? And I'm looking at their shooting percentage last night, over 57% from the floor. Unbelievable. That's having so many guys having the night of their lives. Krutwig, the big guy, 4 of 8. Clayton Custer was off a little bit. He was 2 for 8, but that's okay. Towns, 4 for 6. Ingram, 4 for 6. Jackson off the bench, 3 for 3. Williamson off the bench, 3 for 6. One of the most incredible shooting nights I've witnessed. And they were doing it inside. They were doing it outside. They were doing it in transition. And how about the defensive rebounds? I posted a picture on Twitter last night. You can follow on Twitter, at Brad K. Porter. I took a picture of one of their defensive rebounds in the second half for Loyola Chicago against K-State. There were 4 Loyola players around the basket. And the 5th one had a foot inside the lane, but was just outside. How many defensive rebounds do you think Loyola Chicago got against K-State, who's a bigger basketball team? This number is stunning. 32 defensive rebounds 36 total rebounds, 32 on defense. That is a commitment to playing defensive basketball, setting up your transition, setting up your offensive sets. It was unbelievable. And Porter Mosier, the head coach at Loyola Chicago, this is the kind of game that you teach. This is the kind of game you coach. Outstanding coach. Outstanding. And here's Porter Mosier after the game when his team, Loyola Chicago, an 11 seed, stuns the nation and gets a trip to the Final Four.
I saw you go up, you hug your family, they're crying, you're celebrating on the floor. What does this feel like?
It's surreal to enjoy this. You know, every coach will tell you, your coach's wife and your kids, it's such a journey. And, you know, just I thought of them right away. And to go through this with this type of group of young men, I mean, it's this high character group on and off the floor. It's amazing what happens when you get a group that believes. People were talking about that we weren't celebrating enough. I'm telling you, these guys believe they could advance, believe they could be here.
Tell us a little bit of how you put this team together to the point that they didn't pay any attention to that ranking stuff, and they came out with confidence.
Coach Thompson, it started with getting winning kids. You know, kids at seven state champions, winning programs, kids that had a gene in them that it was about winning and not themselves. And they share the ball, and what we did with this offense of spacing it and sharing it, you got to have unselfish kids and kids that win. And that's what we have. That's what we've put together, high-character winning kids.
Just a couple more things. So the first three games of this tournament took a game-winning shot. And I asked you yesterday, wouldn't it be nice if you were able to breathe easy the last few minutes? Was it nice to breathe easy at the end of this?
Yes. Sister told me she couldn't handle another one. So we had to do that. But these guys, it was almost the same way in the Missouri Valley Tournament. These guys just believe and they grinded. I'm telling you, everyone was asking me, are you letting them enjoy the moment after we got into the Elite Eight? I'm like, heck yeah. It was an unbelievable scene at the hotel. We've never had this kind of Loyola support. The skyline of Chicago is lit up. It says Loyola Ramblers. And it's a lot to handle for these guys. But it really was. Every film session, every walkthrough in the ballroom, our things, they were locked in. It has been all business every time it's time to be in business. And that's a mature, focused group.
Man, go with your team and enjoy
Coach
yourself.
Coach Thompson, thank you. It's an honor to be here with you, Coach.
Thank you. Thank you.
The entire city of Chicago lit up for Loyola. And as one of the players said after the game, look, a lot of people don't know, Loyola is the only team from the state of Illinois to win a national championship. 1963. Think of all the teams Illinois had back in the day. Either in the Bill Self era, before the Bill Self era, after the Bill Self era. They had a ton of players. They had some great players. They've never won a national championship. Loyola is into the Final Four. So great stuff for Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson. And both players were put on the All-Region team for the South. And Ben Richardson was named the player of the region. Top player in the tournament. MVP. Or whatever. Is it MOP, most outstanding player? The NCAA likes to dabble with words and coffee cups and all kinds of things because they need everything the way they want it, and everything has to be just a little bit different. Keep the cash rolling in. Come up with something different. Copyright something so we can sell it. But so happy for Ben Richardson, Clayton Custer, and their high school coach from Blue Valley Northwest, Ed Fritz. And the coach there, Porter Mosier, said, it's not just about the coach. The coach isn't the only one who has to dedicate his time. It's about the family, too. And I personally, I know Danielle Sargent, who's now Danielle Musselman, who used to work at the channel formerly known as Metro Sports. She's married to Coach Musselman at Nevada. And watching her through the tournament and their beautiful daughter Mariah and how excited they were for the whole thing, it takes a lot from the family side, you know, because coaches put in the long hours, late nights, early mornings, film study. And it's a grind on the families, too. And so Porter Mosier was sure to talk about that. Then there was Sister Jean. I don't honestly know. Jed, I don't know. Do you know many 98-year-olds? I don't. There's not many of them around.
No, not many.
I don't know how this 98-year-old nun has this kind of energy to be up at these tournaments, to be into the tournaments, to be emailing scouting reports to the players, to be emailing them after the games, to do... How many interviews did she do last night? She was everywhere. And on this Palm Sunday, I'll just say, God bless Sister Jean. She is an absolute inspiration, Jed. I don't know about you. So, there was a shock jock down in, was it Kentucky? Louisville somewhere?
Was it Jason Anderson?
No, it was not Jason
Was it
Anderson.
Andy Sweeney?
No, it was not those guys. Okay, I know that. It was a shock talk jock. Say that three times fast. Who tweeted out something very derogatory about Sister Jean, and the backlash has been overwhelming.
Normally, the public figure that like burst onto the scene, you can find something that haunts them. I don't think a 98-year-old nun is probably going to
It's not the
easiest target to sling mud at. But the Sister Jean mania has blown up. I was listening on my way into ESPN Radio. And Marcus Spears, I think he does a national show, and he talked about how he bought a T-shirt from Sister Jean. They're making bobbleheads. It's getting a little out of control, but it is an unbelievable story.
You know what? If I'm 98 years old and I'm still kicking and I've got a basketball team that's going to the Final Four, make me a bobblehead. She's got her own shoes, her own...
Yeah, the
Air Sister
Prayer
Jeans
Jordans.
The Prayer Jordans. Whatever, put my name and a face on whatever, shot glasses, those decorative spoons that you find in gas stations on the road between Kansas City and Columbia or Kansas City and Denver out in the middle of nowhere.
Interesting that the first thing that you came up with was shot glasses.
Well, whatever it is, whatever it takes. Watching this tournament, sometimes, you know, I enjoy
calm the nerves.
Yeah, calm the nerves, yes. But that's also a great story. And I'll finish up with this because we're going to take a timeout here. For the most part, Charles Barkley brings nothing to the tournament coverage. He's terrible. I do a bad Charles Barkley. Do you have a good one? Can you do it?
No, I don't think anyone does it well. Everybody just goes, that's terrible. And
Frank
then
Caliendo
they can't do it.
Does a pretty good job.
Yeah, he's good a lot of people, though. So
yes.
And he's also a professional comedian.
Yes.
So I don't really consider him on the same level as me.
So Charles Barkley doesn't bring a lot to the coverage because he doesn't know the teams and doesn't know the players. He's name value. And Kenny the Jet is actually, I think he puts in a little time. I think he's pretty good. And they have Clark Kellogg on the set, and Ernie Johnson is fantastic. I mean, Ernie's the best at everything he does. I don't know if it's possible to be the best at everything, but he is, Ernie Johnson. But... So Charles Barkley, after the game last night, they were talking about Sister Jean, and the reporter asked Sister Jean, Charles Barkley is asked to meet you. And she said, well, I would meet with Charles, but we'd have to have limitations. And so there was this like uncomfortable pause, like, what is that about? And the reporter said, what do you mean by limitations? And she said, I'm willing to talk basketball with him, but I don't want to see him play basketball anymore. You know, Charles is a few bills over his playing weight. And so Charles made the joke about, well, Sister Jean is great, and I'm pretty sure I'm ticketed not to go to the pearly gates. I'm going to get stopped and turned around. And Kenny the Jet and Clark Kellogg were saying, hey, you know, you could use a pass to get in. And Charles is like, well, then I wouldn't have any of my friends around. Basically saying he hangs around some unsavory characters because he gambles a lot. He gambles while he's golfing a lot. So I thought that was funny. That was a great moment from that postgame. It was very funny, and it was very much like the TNT NBA show, which is always very entertaining. So anyway, so we'll take a timeout here just to set you up. David Leskey's coming up after the timeout talking the Royals. Danny Duffy leaving his spring training outing early yesterday. What does that mean for the home opener coming up Thursday? 1025, Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com. He'll have the K-State side of the story. Not making it to the Final Four. Is Bruce Weber still in the good graces of K-State fans? Is he still out of favor with K-State fans? I don't know. We'll ask Fitz at 11 o'clock. Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com. Talking Sporting KC and smashing and grabbing a point on the road at Colorado after being down 2-0. And 11:30, Danny Klinkscale live from Omaha. He's been covering the Jayhawks all week long, so we will talk with Danny Klinski at 11:30. At noon, Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA tournament starts here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. At 1:20, Texas Tech and Villanova tips off. And then the KU-IMG Network pregame show takes over at 2:30. So when the KU pregame show takes over, that Texas Tech-Villanova game will be picked up over on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM. And then, of course, KU and Duke at 4 o'clock. The best tournament coverage on the planet in Kansas City. On the planet in Kansas City? Not to rethink that. I should have workshopped that one first. Is right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. We are broadcasting live from the Rally House Studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Another fine selection from our wonderful producer, Jed Marshall. Lead-in music is fantastic once again. Jed, who is... this is how I show my age on this show. By the way, this is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. You can follow me on Twitter, at Brad K. Porter. Jed, I show my age when I always ask, who is this?
This is Talib. I always want to call him Akib Talib. This is Talib Kweli.
Okay.
But this song's like 15 years old, so yeah. It's not like a new jam.
It's not new. Well, when it comes to, I'm an old school hip-hop guy, so I kind of, I fall away. Probably 10, 12 years ago, I kind of stopped with the new stuff, but you got to put together like a compilation for me.
I will. I'll send you a playlist. Yeah. A lot of the hip-hop that I listen to is a lot more old school bass. So.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good track right there. I like that one. It makes you feel, it's like yesterday. It's dark, it's dreary, it's cold in Kansas City and across the Midwest. And that music kind of picks me up a little bit. I like that.
It's just all about getting the head bobbing.
All about getting the head bobbing. Yeah, exactly. That's it. You're driving in your car, and I still do the thing where I put my left arm up on the top of the steering wheel, and that's it. I'm just relaxing. And yeah, I'm old and I'm dorky, and my kids remind me of that all the time. I posted a picture on Twitter last night of Sister Jean being interviewed after the game, the Loyola Chicago victory over K-State, and Sister Jean was wearing her Final Four hat backwards during the interview, and I snapped a picture and I put it on Twitter, and I said, my kids always tell me I'm too old to do this, and I'm going to show them this. She's 98, still pulling it off. I'm only whatever I am. I'm not going to say. I get depressed. Speaking of depressed, we had some depressing news with the Royals yesterday. Maybe not depressing. It may be nothing. I don't know. But the Royals opening day, Thursday, Kauffman Stadium against the Chicago White Sox. Danny Duffy scheduled to start against James Shields. Joining us now, David Leskey from Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Twitter, at DB Leskey, L-E-S-K-Y. David, you saw the tweets that came out yesterday about spring training. Danny Duffy being visited by the trainer twice and then having to come out after two pitches in the third inning. He would later say, I'm okay. It just felt like I was throwing a ball in a swimming pool, which I don't like. But he's confident he's going to start, but he's going to leave it up to the trainers. I don't know. I mean, alarm bells went off for me. What about you?
Well, they went off for me. I was kind of doing some stuff and kind of just watching the game a little bit on the Gamecast app, and I noticed in the first inning he threw 13 pitches and 12 changeups, and I thought, well, that doesn't seem right, and I'm thinking that the changeups were misclassified because some of them were like 87, 88, 89. I'm thinking that was a fastball, and they didn't.
Somebody tweeted out they thought the velo was sitting at 90.
Yeah, I saw I think I saw a couple 91s maybe but right before he got pulled. And so I thought something was going on. Then you see, you're out and about, and you check in, you see injury delay. Okay, well, that's obvious it's Duffy. And then he stays in, you think, okay, it's inverted, and then he leaves later. His explanation, it's like when you have to pop something and then it feels better immediately. I get that. And so, there's every reason to believe it could be nothing. We've all had, our knee to pop or elbow needs to pop or whatever, then once it does, you're fine. It hurts like crazy, it pops, you feel fine. Maybe that's what it was, but shoulder injuries, it's scary. Given his performance in his outing, couple outings before yesterday, he's had a rough spring. So not that you want to look at spring training stats and put too much importance onto them, but at the same time, you kind of wonder, was the bad performance because he was hurting and he hadn't said anything? And knowing Danny Duffy, you know, making that start on opening day, he hasn't made an opening day start in Kansas City before, because last year was in Minnesota. That's a big deal to him. I don't think he'd want to risk that. So who knows? I think at this point, you have to assume he's going to start, but it would not surprise me if we see Ian Kennedy on Thursday.
All right, we're talking with David Lesky, Baseball Prospectus, talking about the Royals. Danny Duffy leaving his final spring training start early after two pitches in the third inning. And, David, I think Maria Torres does a great job as the new lead beat writer at the Kansas City Star covering the Royals. And some of her quotes from Duffy said, you know, like I said, it felt like I was throwing in a swimming pool. It's the last spring training start. No need to push it. Let's be smart about it. And look, I've covered spring training for 20 years. I know what happens at different points of spring training. And for pitchers in particular, they can have what we call a dead arm. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps it's just a dead arm. I'm not there. I haven't talked with the training staff. They usually don't talk, but haven't been able to ask Ned Yost about it. But maybe best case scenario, it's a little dead arm. Maybe he skips that opening day start and he's ready for what would be his second start in the rotation. That's where I'm knocking. I'm going to literally knock on wood here in the studio and hope that that's the worst thing, that maybe it's just dead arm and he'll be okay after a few days.
Yeah, it could very well be. Now, typically, I wasn't a major league pitcher or anything special, but when I was playing, my dead arm was more in the forearm area. But, you know, that's okay. But other people might have it elsewhere. So, you know, I think it's unfortunate because we don't really know. It's kind of a wait and see. All we've heard is Duffy saying he's confident he'll make the start. And, you know, for what that's worth, I don't think it's worth that much. Because mm-hmm. Like I said, he's a guy who wants to make that start so badly that, of course, he'll say that. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think we'll probably get some news today because I believe he said they're going to test it out today. It's like you said. I think obviously best case scenario is everything's fine. It was just a blip and it happens and moving on. But I mean, I think there is a possibility that, you know, maybe he misses a start or two and his season starts on April 12th or whatever it might be. And that's not really that big of a deal. But for this team, I don't think there's a whole lot of a shot for them to compete. I think that they're bad, not horrible. And, you know, there's not a whole lot that can happen for them to win. But the one thing that has to happen is Duffy has to make 30-plus starts, which he's never done. And truthfully, Carnes has to make 30-plus starts also, which he's never done. So, you know, it's not likely, but Duffy's number one on that importance. And you know, he's already in jeopardy, which is not a good sign for the season.
We're talking with David Lesky here on Sports Sunday. I am Brad Porter. Follow David on Twitter, at DB Lesky. Lots of good Royal stuff there from Baseball Prospectus. And I guess there's the two schools of thought there. One, the Royals are going to be bad but not terrible, and you need every arm you can get. So the Royals really need Danny Duffy. The other side of that, the angel and the devil side, is, well, if they're going to be bad, not terrible, then it's okay if he misses a couple of starts because it's not going to make the difference between, you know, 82 wins and 90 wins. That's not going to happen. So I'm tending to go with caution over excitement and just make sure everything's 100% okay before he makes a start. That's where I am. I'm not going to be terribly disappointed if he doesn't start opening day. I'll be sad, but I won't be disappointed.
I'll be disappointed for him more than anything.
Yes, exactly. He's such a good dude. Yeah,
he is, and he loves Kansas City so much. And like I said, you know, he made the opening day start last year, but it was in Minnesota. And this year, he'd had the chance to do it in front of the Kansas City fans. And truthfully, it's going to be one of four or five sellouts maybe this season. I mean,
this
is not the 2015 team where they're going to sell out on Friday night. It's opening day. It's maybe the Cardinals series. Although that hasn't been selling out even when the Royals have been good. You know, maybe a Yankees game here. Yeah, so it's just not going to sell out very often. So this is going to be his chance to pitch in front of the huge crowd. And, yeah, I mean, it's disappointing for him if it doesn't happen. But we'll see. I mean, it very well could be that they test it out today. And what he said yesterday is right. He feels completely fine. It was just a weird blip. And, onward and upward, and he makes 32 starts this year. Well, we won't know for a little while, but you know, I think we'll have some answers for Thursday at least. Later today or tomorrow.
Yeah, I still can't believe it's Thursday. It's just, I mean,
I know.
I'm in spring training during March Madness, and so my attention is divided appropriately between the two subjects.
Right.
But not being there this year, I've been more focused on March Madness because I feel detached if I'm not in Arizona. But the Thursday snuck up on me. I mean, it's opening day, and you know, there's after the roster moves yesterday, Ricky Nolasco was let go. And then they let go of the outfielder. I'll draw on a blank.
Michael Saunders.
Yeah, Michael Saunders, who was an outside chance. Very outside chance. But they're what, down to 37 players on the major league roster out of 40? So they've got some work to do. This front office has some work to do.
Yeah, I was counting. There are 28 guys right now on the 40-man roster who are still in camp. And I believe one of them listed on the website is Kevin McCarthy, who I think I saw was optioned yesterday.
He was optioned out, yep.
So I couldn't remember if it was yesterday or the day before, but either way, he's not on the roster. So really 27, they're going to have to find a way to add Ryan Goins, who I think is going to make the team, and probably Blaine Boyer, who looks like he's going to make the team. So that means they've got 29 guys for 25 spots, basically. And I don't think any of the other non-roster guys are going to make it. So there are some easy moves. You know, Bubba Starling, I think. Bubba Starling's going to make an opening day roster, it looks like, and then be placed immediately on the 60-day DL to make some room for one of the non-roster guys. So kind of like what they did with Hunter Dozier last year when everybody thought he made the team for about 10 minutes, and then they announced they placed him on the 60-day DL to make 40-man room for – I forgot who it was now, but somebody. But, you know, they're going to have to make a couple decisions on Rule 5 guys, maybe DFAing a guy or two. They have a full 40-man roster, but they need to add two guys. So we'll see where that comes from. That's the ever-revolving challenge of being a general manager, is trying to find a way to fit your 46 guys on the 40-man roster.
You're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. We're talking with David Leskey from Baseball Perspectives. Follow him on Twitter, at DBLeskey, L-E-S-K-Y. And I've been in general managers' offices before, and I see I've seen the whiteboards where they slide names around, and they have the whiteboard for their own organization and then the one for other players around professional baseball and who they might be targeting. And it's a chess game times 12, trying to figure out what you're going to do with your own roster versus trying to pick up guys. I had an interesting thought this week, and it was probably sparked, I think I was listening to, it was either Srem Petro or it was the Border Patrol with Nate and Steven and Jake. Greg Holland is still out there.
Mm-hmm.
He is still unsigned. And I know he wanted huge money from Colorado, and Colorado said, actually, no, and we're going to go with Wade Davis because you've been hurt before, and we're not going to lay out 3 years and huge capital. And Wade's had his bugaboos in his arm before, but they chose Wade Davis. Greg Holland, could the Royals be in a position, could Dayton Moore be in a position where he's built up enough goodwill with a player, i.e. like what happened with Mike Moustakas, to where if things didn't work out for Greg Holland somewhere else, he'd be willing to listen to Dayton Moore and take kind of a friendly offer with the Royals? I'd take Greg Holland.
I would take Greg Holland, too, and I can tell you with certainty that Greg Holland would take the Royals if the offer was there. The problem, though, is Greg Holland got a qualifying offer. And so if the Royals...
You're right. Gosh,
they have to give up a draft pick. I'm embarrassed I don't know this. You'll laugh at it because I'm embarrassed because it's stupid to be embarrassed by this. But I don't... It's the third highest draft pick. And I know that there's that competitive balance pick that teams randomly get. That the Royals are in the round A, so that's why they have another pick after the first round, aside from the Hosmer and Kane compensation. But I'm not sure that's protected. I'm not sure if the compensation picks for Hosmer and Kane are protected. So the thing is, if it's pick 93 or whatever, then I think you might roll the dice with Greg Holland. If it's pick 33, you don't.
Right,
so,
right.
I'm not 100% sure which pick it is that that the Royals have to give up. But either way, I find it hard to believe that the Royals would sign Greg Holland today, knowing that he would not be ready for Thursday, almost certainly, and give up a draft pick for that. Now, I will say, I could see them swooping in. If Holland stays unsigned through the draft, I could see the Royals swooping in and saying, hey, we'd like to give you a three-year deal with 2018 prorated. I don't think that's the best idea, but if they want, I could see that happening. But I don't think they're going to give up a draft pick for him. That's the only issue, because on paper, Royals bullpen has a lot of issues. They're looking for potential trade chips. You know, Greg Holland is perfect. I just don't know that they're going to want to give up that kind of draft capital to have the potential of trading him in July.
And I ran into a former executive of the Players Association here in Kansas City about a week and a half ago. And one of the things, and he didn't tell me this, but one of the things I'm going to guess is the Players Association is not going to allow the qualifying offer compensation trade-off thing in the next CBA, because players are getting killed by it. I mean, it happened to Kendrys Morales. It happens all around baseball. The one guy that actually made out like a bandit on this was Colby Rasmus a couple years ago, mm-hmm. when he took the 15 plus million from the Astros, and now he makes about three and a half. But Players Association needs to get rid of this, and along with several other things. We're talking with David Leske. Follow him on Twitter at DB Leske. Royals opening day is Thursday. There's not a lot of debate on positions, but I do wonder. The outfield in particular, the Royals have a problem, mm-hmm. and it's the Alex Gordon problem. You know, hitting below 100 in spring training, and you know when a guy hits 420 in spring training with 9 home runs, we know it doesn't mean anything. Like last year with the kid with the big
O'Brien,
yeah,
Peter O'Brien, yeah,
and Peter O'Brien is a super nice guy, by the way. And
great guy, but then he hit 170 in the minors.
Yeah, exactly. And so spring numbers on the high end are unreliable. But spring numbers on the low end are concerning. And when Alex Gordon is hitting below 100, now you're looking at a situation of, okay, not only where do you place him? Is he going to start in left field? Is he going to play center field? Is it John Jay in center field? Is it John Jay in right? Is it Soler in right? That's the kind of thing that I think still needs to be cleared up this week. I'm not set on anything at this point.
No, it's. You know, I think their best defensive alignment is probably Gordon in left, Jay in center, Soler in right, which is Gordon's the only one in his best position. But I think he's so good there that makes it the best position, because Soler's best position is also left. Jay's best position is probably right. But they don't really have a center fielder other than Orlando, who can't hit. I did have somebody tell me that he chased 400 in 2016 because he was hitting 380 on like May 13th or something.
He wasn't exactly George Brett hitting 390.
No, he didn't have his arms above his head on second base.
Right. I was at that game, by the way.
Oh, were you?
Yes, I was.
I don't know what they're going to do. I think we'll probably see Gordon in left, Jay in center, Soler in right more often than not. You know, it's been discussed. The depth chart showed for a while Soler in left, Gordon in center, and Jay in right.
I don't like that.
I don't like it either, and I thought that seemed odd just because they hadn't really played that way in spring training at all. So I'm not sure why that would have been the obvious solution. But
I'll bet it's an intern who makes up that depth chart.
You're probably right. And so I think, you know, with the Gordon situation, I wrote about this on Wednesday or Thursday or whenever it was. He's got 80 games before Jorge Bonifacio comes back.
Right.
Now, who knows what Bonifacio will look like? Who knows if he's, you know, maybe it's the PEDs that helped him to look so good in spring training. But either way, he looked like he was on his way to a fantastic season this year. And so Gordon's got half the year to prove it. And you know, I will say this. He probably takes exception. He is no longer hitting below 100. He's up in the rarefied air of the 120s, I believe.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So watch out, Ted Williams.
Oh, boy. But look out.
It's a tough situation. And I think that because of his defense, he's going to get a shot to stay in the lineup. But you could hear it in Ned Yost's voice on the broadcast the other day when he talked about getting Gordon minor league at bats. And it doesn't seem like this is a he's going to start 150 games this year. This is a we're going to see what happens. and if it doesn't happen very well for him, I think he becomes the fourth outfielder. They're not going to release him because it's too much money to cut. But I would not be surprised if he plays something like 75 of the first 80 games and then he's a defensive replacement 30 times for Jorge Soler. I just think that that seems to be the most likely move. Get him some starts against right-handed pitchers who don't have great fastballs. You know, let him maybe go 2-for-4 against a soft tosser here and there, and that's that. It's sad that that's the point we're at, but it's hard to justify playing him 150 times this year because the bat just isn't there. Now, I will say, Gordon has been a streaky hitter throughout his career, so this could be just one of those bad streaks. Of course, if you say that, then 2017 is also one of his bad streaks, and so is 2016. So it's been going on a long time, but you know, he's got a half a season now, I think, and if he doesn't prove it, then I think he's to the bench, which is, like I said, sad to see for a franchise icon.
All right, David Lesky, I appreciate you joining us. I know you went to spring training a couple of weeks ago, and hopefully we see some good things. Thursday is opening day at Kauffman Stadium, and we'll just have to wait to see if Danny Duffy makes the start and who's in the starting lineup, and I'm sure I'm going to follow you on Twitter at DB Lesky, Lesky, and get all the good information from Baseball Prospectus. David, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
All right, enjoy your Sunday. All right, that is David Lesky joining us talking Royals baseball. Opening day is Thursday. We don't know if Danny Duffy's going to start. We had somebody call in off the air that wanted some opinions about the college basketball NCAA tournament broadcasters. So we might kick that around here in the next couple of segments and see who you like and who you don't like. So, but certainly we'll get ready for Royals baseball. We will take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
March Madness weekend. Chance to get to the Final Four. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Jed Marshall, our producer and DJ this morning. Best NCAA tournament coverage in Kansas City is right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB and ESPN Kansas City. At noon, Westwood One's pregame show starts. At 1:20 p.m., Texas Tech and Villanova tips off, 3-1. Then the KU-IMG Sports Network pregame show starts at 2:30, leading into KU and Duke at 4 o'clock. So at 2:30, when the KU Network pregame show starts, you can flip over to ESPN Kansas City, 1510 a.m. and 94.5 FM, to hear the rest of the Texas Tech-Villanova game. So you have your choice. You can go all in on one or the other, and you can get it all covered right here as part of the Union Broadcasting family. A couple of funny tweets have come over the Twitter box in the last few minutes. One is apparently a K-State fan. Jed Marshall pointed this out. K-State fan tweeted out, and I'm not going to give out the handle, but said, Grayson Allen should kick Devontae Graham right in the you-know-whats. But he said, can I say what he said on the air? Okay. Grayson Allen should kick Devontae Graham in the balls in the first 5 minutes on Sunday. That's from a K-State fan, at least going by the Twitter handle. Lala Vic, who is, we believe, is LeGerald Vic's mom. Is that what we're saying? LeGerald Vic's mom responded, in all caps. So I got to read it like it's in all caps. It's probably best that Grayson keeps his feet, hands, and all other objects to himself. To which our Joshua Briscoe, one of the young, up-and-coming, talented radio hosts in town, tweeted back, the world needs more loud sports moms. Joshua Briscoe killing it, as always. So, LeGerald Vic's mom responding to a K-State fan, and then Joshua Briscoe just dropping a bomb all over it. It's funny what you see on Twitter. All the negative stuff going on in the world, the news and politics and stuff, I get so tired of it. Wears me out. But I like funny moments like that. And then there's a Sister Jean account. And I don't know if it's not verified, so I don't know if it's the actual Sister Jean. But it says Sister Jean, Loyola Chicago team chaplain, over 2,000 followers. I'm going to go with it's legitimate, but no, it's not legitimate. Okay. Whoever...
On Twitter, never go with legitimacy.
Okay. So if it's someone pretending to be Sister Jean, it's pretty funny, actually. This person tweeted out, I pulled out my daily dose of holy water and was immediately told by security to pour it into a Powerade cup before consuming it. That's not Sister Jean. But that's funny.
That's clever, yeah, but I don't think a 98-year-old's
no,
thinking that.
I don't think she's living on Twitter. But it's a funny account, and it was Vahe Gregorian from The Star retweeted it, so that's how I saw it, or he liked it, or whatever, so that's how I saw it. So, NCAA testers, what do you think? Somebody wants to know what we think of Chris Webber, former Michigan star. He was on that call for a Michigan-Florida State game. We'll talk about the post-game interview with Leonard Hamilton last night with Dana Jacobson. It did not go well. But Dana Jacobson is a pro. Thought she handled it great. It was an awkward situation. So we'll kind of talk about that, and then we'll continue to talk KU and Duke and the Final Four. Half the board is set. Half will be set today, which you can all listen to right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. We'll be back after this quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB live from the Rally House Studios. Hell yes. You take me
the world around. This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.